reality. Welcome to the second hour of the DG and Sun KMOX. First time I ever said that.
I know.
I like it.
It was cool.
Like it?
Yeah.
It's like hour two. Let's go.
I felt like all three of us kind of went like, what's this now?
I heard someone do it the other day. I can't remember who it was. It could have been someone here. I don't remember. But talking about, now you're listening to the fourth hour of the blah, 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 blah. I think it was Morning Joe. Sounds right.
Well, let's rip it off.
Yeah, what's Morning Joe?
Doing it all the time.
What's Scarborough going to do about it?
Seriously.
He still owes me $20.
They're going to take him off the air anyway.
The world's first non-medically assisted suicide pod has now been finished and is 6 months away from being used for the first time in Switzerland. So this is a, if you've ever seen the movie Passengers, where they're in their little sleep pods, it looks a lot like that. And it is nitrogen-based. And so what it does is it goes from 100% oxygen or whatever oxygen should be at to 0.05, and all the rest is nitrogen. And so supposedly, within 30 seconds, you are unconscious, and then you are deceased within 5 minutes, and you have to go through the government, and you have to have two doctors sign off that you are in your right mind, and you're doing these for physical, mental, emotional reasons, and that you know what you're doing. And then you get in this thing, and it closes. It's creepy. And it says, give me your name. You give your name. Give me your date of birth. You give your date of birth. Do you understand what's going to happen if you push this button? Yes, I do. Push the button when you're ready. And then when you push the, once you depress the button, there's no going back. It's, there's no abort button to it. General impressions.
I would put an abort button in there.
Yeah. I,
never know. Maybe not. Maybe it doesn't happen.
Interesting.
But you never know. Somebody changes their mind when it's that real. Maybe.
I think when you cross the line of no return, but you are still able to move and look around, I think a lot of people will.
A lot of terror.
A lot of people wish to return. And in fact, kind of to Wheel's point, I don't understand why there wouldn't be an abort button. I don't understand why there wouldn't be.
I think just the way this particular mechanism works,
okay,
it would be unsafe for people outside of it.
Oh, okay.
Well, and if you're injured or you're hurt or whatever's going on in there, and then you get out, I mean, what is someone going to turn around and sue the company? I hate to bring it to that, but I'm sure that's a consideration.
I'm just saying, if I were trying to design, that's the thing that I would do, is you got your last chance. You know, you got your, you know, I'm done. Nope, wrong. I screwed up. You know, because you can, that can happen with, so the thing is, like, people worry about that particular mechanism, but there are a whole lot of ways that people take their own lives. And none of them are that peaceful. None of them are that controlled. None of them are that detailed, where you have to go to two doctors and you have to get approval and do all that. Because a lot of that can change your mind, or you may be ruled unfit for it because you're doing it for the wrong reason or whatever. Nobody's going to make that decision for you if you just have a handgun. You know, there are a lot of things that go into that. So I understand the idea of the process and the mechanism, but I would definitely think, like, the fail safe at the last second would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm really not trying to be rude or insensitive, but if you need a fail safe, then why do we have the machine in the first place?
What do you mean?
Well, somebody changes their mind.
Well, but you've taken so many steps to prove that you're ready to do it, and then you're still going to change your mind.
And when you, and the way this machine works, when you get in there, and it say, do you know what happens when you push the button?
Right.
And you say yes. If you don't push the button, you can get out.
Okay.
Like, you have to push the button.
That's fair enough. Maybe that serves as this failsafe.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in an interesting position because of losing my brother to suicide. And I do a lot of work with organizations. And if you have one and you need someone to help you raise money, let me know. I'll do that. And yet I'm so staunchly protective against the government for people's right to do that if that's what they want to do. And I going back to my law school days, I'm not going to have a well thought out reason for this legally for all my fellow attorneys out there. But I do think that the state has an interest in my life. I think it's fair that they say, if you want to do this, if you want this sort of a thing available to you, that's not in a back alley somewhere, you're going to need to jump through some hoops, some reasonable hoops like what Switzerland has. Go see two doctors, get them to sign off, have all these, you know, quote-unquote fail safes.
Mm-hmm.
That rings true to me. I don't think that we should have them in 7-Elevens where you can just go in and and do it.
Right.
And I understand why people, especially religious people, say that's God's decision. It's not your decision. Mm-hmm. I understand the logic.
Yeah.
I just know that the human suffering I have seen at the end of life, and I'm not even all that familiar with it, the way that like hospice nurses and people like that are, but the human suffering you see at the end of life would not be tolerated if it were a dog. That when we took Augie in a year ago and the vet said, it's time. Had we said, you know what, we think he can live another 8 months and it's God's decision when Augie dies, they probably would have tried to stop us because it would have been inhumane. But when it's a person, it's the opposite. Just my two cents.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I, you know, it's not a clinical thing. And I don't think anybody is wrong for having the belief that it is wrong to take your own life. Like, you're not wrong for that. It's what you believe. That's fine. I think the question comes back to what you're saying. Who gets to decide for me or for any individual person what they can or can't do in that moment? And the problem with me with the idea of these kinds of mechanisms that we're talking about, whether it's the pod or the other ways that, like going back to Dr. Kevorkian, right? There are so many other ways that people currently use to end their lives that are horrible, gruesome, terrible, traumatizing to them and to their family members. The question really becomes the humanity of it, right? Yes, there's a calculated decision here, and there are many ways that that can get done that are, and they're all terrible, right? The whole thing is terrible. It's a terrible subject, and it's because people are in a bad way, usually, you know, depression, something along those lines, or the physical part. Like, I think the woman, there was a woman, might have been Switzerland, who was like, I'm just in pain every day, like physical pain every day. I have this disease. It's never going to get better.
The latest one was a 31-year-old woman who was in emotional pain.
Right.
She did not have a physical disease. She, unless you consider depression a physical disease, which
debatable.
Debatable. Yeah. But she was in such emotional and mental anguish that she, I think, had to see more than two doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so young, and it was non-physical. But she was the latest. And that was a similar machine to this, but done with a doctor's overseeing it.
And, you know, I understand the hesitation people have to make things like this legal and accessible, because you're right, Wheels. There's so many horrible ways you can choose to go down this path. And I think some people are worried that if you make it easy, then suddenly the floodgates are going to open and a ton of people who are having ideations and thoughts are just like, oh, okay, well, this is an easy, or, you know, this is a more guaranteed way for me to get this done.
Yeah, I think that's a valid argument. And I think my counter to it would be, but it requires a process that might then eventually convince you not to, versus the momentary choice where you make that choice now. It's done now. Right. Like, so that's why I think it's a fascinating conversation, because it might lead other people like, well, I didn't want to do these terrible things. I'm more open to this. But you might, through the counseling and the process, realize, yeah, I don't want to do this, versus you're in a crisis moment and you have access to something else.
Well, as
and you choose that something else that moment.
Who's been down that road with my brother and has had my own thoughts. I've been very open and honest about my struggles with depression and anxiety and such. Been down that road and had those thoughts. I think that if there was a choice like this, that if I got to the point that I said, hey, Dr. Stein, I want you to sign this piece of paper for me, I think there's much less of a chance of me going through with it, just personally, having it put in front of me like that.
Versus the impulse.
As opposed to the impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it's not exact. I don't think we have years of study to tell us one way or the other. But I think those two things were, you know, those are the counter arguments to each other.
Getting there? Here in this country?
I guess it depends, because a lot of the, I'm not picking on anybody. Like, this is not a criticism. This is just, I think, my observation. A lot of the opposition to it would be religious based. And since the trend recently has been more and more people are not participating in organized religion as they used to, it's been trending that way. Maybe that trend stops and turns around, and that means this idea would not ever come around to being a common thing. But 50 years from now, Because what do they call them in the polling? The nuns, N-O-N-E, the people that when they ask for religious affiliation, just check a nun. That group has been growing for a long time, and it may be a majority at some point. If it is, you'll probably see this kind of thing change, because I don't know of a non-religious argument against it. Other than, you know, family members, like, oh, you know, you're the people you care about, you don't want them to do this. But I mean, like, on a broader scale, when you're talking about it as policy as opposed to...
Well, I hadn't thought of it from that angle, because being egocentric, I guess, I always think of it from my angle.
Mm-hmm.
Would I want to do this? What if I wanted to do it? What if my child wanted to do it?
Right.
What if my little Phoebe was the 31-year-old who wanted... Like, horrible.
Yeah.
It also kind of brings up like the death penalty argument too, doesn't it? Because if the state is mandating like, yeah, it's okay for you to take your own life, doesn't that also give the state more power to decide that it's time to take someone's life if they've done something
that's
wrong?
That's certainly the slippery slope argument, which normally I don't like, but in this case, don't make that slope very slippery.
No, and these things are all, this is why these things have to be discussed. And they need to be discussed by smart people at high levels of policymaking. And by experts in these particular fields, people that have studied these things their entire lives need to be having these conversations, because that's a good point. There are so many offshoots from this, right? And there are some parallel arguments that are not nearly as serious, like marijuana usage, right? Marijuana has become legalized in most states, or in a lot of states now, where before it wasn't. And one of the arguments for legalization was, well, people are doing it, and they're doing it in a way that could be more dangerous. They may get tainted drugs. They may get them from drug dealers who are then doing bad things in different ways, versus having it controlled, versus having to go through a process. You have to go to the store. You have to give them cash. You know, like it's not the same thing, and it's certainly not the same level of topic. It's not the same level of seriousness, but it's a similarity in that, you know that a thing is going on. What's the best way to maybe prevent some of it, but also make sure that there is some humanity to it, and then moving from there. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's an easy thing. I don't think there's any, you know, this is the obvious answer. You just have to talk about it.
Yeah. And it's one thing when it's theoretical. It's another when it's now
personal.
Practical.
Yes.
Where they say, like, no, we have the machine. Here it is. It's called, like, the Sarco, I believe, for sarcophagus.
Oh, all right.
The Sarco 4000 or something, which is a little weird
name.
And creepy and on the nose.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe don't name it at all.
Call it anything but something death-related.
Yeah.
Just becomes stupid.
It's a little bit much. But you're right. And all of these things, when they're theoretical, are a lot easier to discuss. And at the moment that they become personal, it changes completely.
Yeah. 223 DG Ask on KMOX. So after the last discussion, talk about what you can do while you're still alive here. A group of professors, academics who study happiness, have done a comprehensive study of happiness. And when it comes to the financial part of happiness, you know, money doesn't buy happiness, all that kind of stuff. They came out with a very simple rule. You simply can't have enough money. That's what they found out. For human happiness, there's no amount of money that has a contraindication to your happiness. The more you have, the happier you are. Which goes against my instincts, because even when we're talking about big money, like the lottery, and I've said things and I've meant them, like, give me $10 million. I'm fine. I don't need 100. I certainly don't need a billion. Give me 10. You'll never hear from me again. I'll go raise a fainting goat somewhere on a ranch, and I'll be fine. But evidently, if you got 10, 20 is better, and 100 is better than that, and a billion is better than that.
I'd love to know the details, too, on, like, does it change?
We'll get them on. I'll send it to Andrew.
Yeah,
we'll get
it's fascinating.
We'll get
does
on.
It change with age, right? Because I can see that if you're 25 or 30 and you get 10 million, you're like, whoa, but 100 would be better.
Oh, dude.
But if you're like 65 and you got 10 million, now I can do whatever I want with the rest
of my time. Speaking
of,
and going back a bit to the suicide conversation last night on TikTok, I get surprised every now and then with how heavy some of these things are, because I'm not expecting it. I got child boxing and horse hospice and things like this. But it was a woman who had stage 4 cancer, and you could tell that she wasn't an actor. She wasn't doing a bit, and she doesn't have much time left. And she was crying and saying, you know, every single day, I know it's a cliche, but be there, do this, do that. it was really sobering. Like I watched the whole thing and then I'm like, you shouldn't watch that because now it's all you're going to get. But it was just,
oh, good point.
Someone's using some of their remaining minutes to tell me something. I'm going to listen to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that's, you know, we talk about all the bad things about the way social media works and all that, but this gives people an opportunity to impact other people, even if it's small. Right. I mean, like it impacted you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost anybody who would watch it and take and you know, watch it like earnestly and sincerely would have it. It would impact you. And then if you carry that impact and it helps something else or helps someone else, or even if it just makes you a little better, it's a different, you know, there's always the downside. We all know the downsides, but that's right there. One area where one person can impact hundreds or thousands or however many people see that, even in a dire situation, they can make a positive impact on people they'll never meet.
One more thing about happiness and money. People are shying away like never before from the McMansions. And evidently, Rachel's generation and Phoebe's generation, that, of course, if you live in a nice neighborhood, the people who live near you also have very nice houses. So you're not being judged by them. But they're saying it's going to become one of the things that is no longer cool, that if someone comes to your house and you live in a McMansion, which I always just think of as, you know, we all know, mm-hmm. like, you spend absolutely as much as you possibly can. You're house poor, basically. Mm-hmm. That will be not cool.
I always see content like this and people will always comment and say, like, this is what happens whenever you're about to hit a recession or something, is these, you know, having a smaller house becomes cool again and underconsumption becomes cool again. Mm. But it's just because that's what's lining up with the economy. I mean, I think it would be kind of silly for my generation to aim for the McMansion when we're just trying to buy our first homes and struggling to do that in the first place.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, chicken or the egg.
This old town just seems so hopeless.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 234. As you know, I do a lot of live endorsements. There's no one I love more than Dr. Kathy Maupin, and she's been with me forever.
Yeah.
Forever now.
Decade.
Handsome husband John in there. St. Louis's most handsome couple. I swear you two. Look fantastic, which
Thank
is
you.
Part of your stock in trade because yes. you are a client.
Right. I'm a client. I was my first patient.
Yeah, you do it all. You're the guinea pig.
Yeah, and I want people to be healthy and look as good as they feel.
So years ago when we first got together and we're talking about testosterone pellets, it was so new and they knew what testosterone was vaguely. They didn't know what a pellet was, but they pretended. But my point is that now there's so many wannabes trying to do this. People now have a concept of what it is, but unless they come to you, and I know this sounds very self-serving, but I know it to be true, you know it to be true. Unless they come to you or another, if you can find another MD, OBGYN who does this, you're not it's not apples to apples.
No, it's really not. There's a lot of pop-up places and a lot of chains that have just come up out of nowhere. And the patient and the people that work there aren't really trained. There's not a doctor there. They have a medical director because they have to by law, but they're never there.
Yeah.
They don't participate. And usually they're a specialty that doesn't know much about hormones, like orthopedics, you know, ER, that kind of thing. That's not really, like, we have to know about this in family practice, internal medicine, endocrine, GYN. You know, those are all hormone specialties.
Yeah.
Now, 20 years ago, they told everybody we didn't need hormones. Remember that WHI study? And so when that happened, no one trained. So there's 20 years of nobody trained in hormones. Hmm. So if you want hormones and you're a female, you really need to go to a specialist.
Yeah.
Because your GYN really wasn't trained in it unless they're really old.
Yeah. Well, you know, Trish, who does the lives for you as well, and she's Trish. She tells everyone everything about how she's feeling.
She's great.
And she's talked to me about that. And my symptoms were having an effect on my life, but I won't say it, not like a female. I mean, you guys go, you just do. Whether you age naturally or you age with help, you guys have it worse. And you feel it worse.
Mm-hmm. And we feel it earlier.
But that means more help.
Right. And and we have other things. We've got estrogen. We don't just have testosterone. We've got progesterone. We've got a uterus. We might bleed. Lots of other things that have to be managed by somebody who understands women's hormones and women's bodies. So that means the criteria for somebody who's treating you has to be a lot higher. And we've done it for 20 years. I mean, we have the most experience. We were the first people in St. Louis to do it. So we've actually educated St. Louis. my book with Brett has educated St. Louis. And so now we have all of these folks that want to be us, but they aren't doing anything besides putting pellets in, and they're not really the same pellets. Not every pellet is the same.
Right. And the way you do it. I get them every 6 months, and in between there, I get a blood test.
Yeah.
And I go in, she's Caroline, she's like, okay, how you feeling? Mm-hmm. Anything to report? I looked at your blood. Here's what you're doing. We're going to add this. We're going to take a little of this off. Mm-hmm. It really is custom.
It is. And it's not just hormones. It is basically nutrition. Like, I brought a test for you today,
a
genetic test. You'll never have to worry about what you're supposed to eat again or why you're gaining weight or why you're losing weight. This is one-time test that you can have. It's called Nutrigen. And we offer it. We don't require it, but we offer it at our office. So you don't have to do trial and error your whole life. You know exactly what you can do to be healthy and to be at the ideal weight.
So what kind of results would you maybe get back? You'd be telling people what kinds of things?
Well, I would tell them things like, okay, so for instance, who would guess that my diet should be 40% fat?
Nope.
I mean, I'm not fat, but I need fat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my genetics says I need. I need 30% protein and 30 whatever the remainder is carb.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I just eat like fruit carbs, and I don't eat a lot of bread carbs. But I know that, and it tells me that.
Yeah.
It tells me never to eat never to eat gluten-free. I should eat gluten. Who knew that? All kinds of things about your diet. Like, I thought we had I had diabetic genes. I don't. I have obesity genes, but I'm not obese.
Hmm.
So you know what you're born with, and then you can change it by your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the hormones help. Diet helps. And nutrition with supplements help. This even tells you what supplements to take.
And it's just a swab.
It's just not like a blood test or anything. So we have patients come in and say, yeah, I want to do this. They take a little box home like I'm going to give you, and then we're going to talk about your results.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just swab their cheek. They do a few things online. And then about 3 weeks later, we've got a full report, 65, 70 pages.
Wow, I'm looking forward to it.
And so it really tells you everything.
Yeah.
So that's something we've added. We've added a lot of things because I just can't let people age in a way that they're sick. They're not healthy. If I find somebody that I can't figure out, I figure it out. Dr. Sullivan is really a great diagnostician. She figures out everything, and she knows a little bit more about general medical diseases because she's family medicine.
Yeah.
So if I've got a problem with something like heart disease that I've never heard of or something like that, then we go through it. She educates me, and then we take care of our patients together.
Yeah, what a great relationship.
But it's not just here, have some pellets, see you later.
Yeah.
We have a nurse that takes calls and takes emails, and our nurse practitioners also do. So we always are available for your questions, and we educate people with our health cast.
So the testosterone, it does a lot of things, but one of the things it helps with is weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys have additional things for that as well.
Right.
So if you're out there looking for the next magic bullet or something that you've heard from someone that works, come to us and let us...
Right. We use semaglutide and tirzepatide, which are the two injectables you take once a week. And basically women who are over 50 are usually insulin resistant. The minute you hit menopause, you get insulin resistant. Carbs do a number on you. So this helps you with that, and it helps you lose weight. But the pellets keep you from losing muscle, which is really key, because most people who are over 40, female, over 50, male, when they lose weight, they lose muscle. And that's terrible for you.
Yeah.
You need to have all your muscles.
Yeah, that's kind of the name of the game.
As I flex my muscles, that's part of it.
No, the older you get, it really seems to be about muscle mass.
It does. And that's what keeps you moving.
Yeah.
So if you want to stay healthy, well, independent, productive, you got to have muscles. You have to do some exercise.
Talking to Dr. Maupin here from BioBalance Health and BioBalance Skin. So that covers it pretty well on the pellet side. On the skin side, what are you excited about?
Oh, man. We are doing so much skin tightening because everybody's lost fat, and now they've got skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have several machines that we use, like lasers and RF machines. Alma Laser has a machine that tightens skin without pain. See, I don't like pain.
No, so I share that.
I don't buy machines that are painful. We also have a new machine called TED. And TED is a machine, you don't want it because you look beautiful like that. But guys that have a little loss on the top of their head or at their, you know, if they're starting to lose it, it makes your hair grow back. It's amazing ultrasound that cavitates a little, kind of a little area right at the follicle level. Yeah. And then there's a serum they've worked on. This is Alma again, has worked on for 17 years, and it drives it down to the hair follicle level, feeds it, and it wakes up all these hair follicles. Before we, when we first bought it, we did it on John, we did it on my office manager, and it's, and he needs another two treatments, but he's going strong because we count the follicles.
Wow.
And we can tell that they're growing.
That's really cool.
So we've got lots of cool stuff, guys and girls.
If you get, I tell you what, if it gets to the point where I could have a full head of hair, look out.
Well, you might, because you have to shave it, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't just, it's just not like that.
It's just not, so just not on the top.
It's possible
yeah.
that we could.
I had microneedling for the first time.
Oh, did you?
It
did you
good.
Love that?
I did.
Yeah, your skin looks great.
It was a whole bunch of nothing. It was. It was.
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, even though I get tattoos, anytime you say needle, I'm like, But it was easy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm so used to Botox.
Yeah.
That, you know, needles don't really bother me, but microneedling does a huge, makes a huge difference.
That's another thing with people out there doing Botox on their own.
Well, that's scary.
That's crazy.
That could, you can't imagine the things, eye drop and facial paralysis and the things that you shouldn't, should never do. You should be, go to an expert.
Like Dana.
Yeah. Dana's the expert. Yeah. She's done this, she's my, around, she's not my age, but she's close. And she's done this forever, and yeah. she's wonderful.
She's
also an artist. You can't just go to somebody for filler who's just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to stick this in here. If they can't visualize your face when you were younger. Mm-hmm. So I always have my patients bring a picture in. Here's what I look like when I was 30 and 40 and 50. Now, I want to look like whatever, 40.
Yeah.
You're never going to look 18 again because your face isn't done yet when you're 18.
So the skin side's pretty easy. You can look at the menu of what you guys do, make an appointment, go in, get the treatment, meet the ladies. They're mm-hmm. all fantastic. On the pellet side, what should people do? If they're convinced they want to take a step, what do they do?
Mm-hmm. Well, what they should do is just go to our website and it says become a patient. And it asks if you're a male or female, and then you go through and fill out a health form. Then that sends in and my nurse calls you and says, what lab do you want to go to? Here's a lab. And we have a deal now on our labs that we were having trouble getting people. They've high deductibles, getting their insurance to pay for it. So now we get a discount from Quest.
Good.
So we pass it on to our patients so that it's really inexpensive and they can just get their lab just with like a couple $100. So then we can see them faster. They don't have to run around trying to get lab, and they don't have a bill for lab.
That's good.
They just have that $200. So basically, then we make an appointment. If they're candidates, if there's somebody who's perfect, they have perfect everything.
It's something else.
I just say, you know what? It's something else, and you need to take this lab to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I rarely have to do that because people are so educated now.
Yeah.
They know what they need and they know how old they are and or they've had hysterectomies or.
And within a, I can vouch within a couple of weeks of getting your first pellets, you feel it. Typically, they'll give you a little testosterone shot during that. You'll feel that in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel it. The good thing is you don't drop off the table, but but it's good that you can feel the difference.
Right.
Otherwise,
and,
why are you
and
doing
remember
it?
You we would come in and you'd say, hey, am I ready yet? Because you wanted me to just look at you and see if you were ready. And I could kind of, after all this, thousands of patients over all these years, I can look at people and tell if they need
this. I remember the first time you told me
and
I need to come see you.
I think you need this now.
Still don't know what you looked at.
Yeah,
but.
I mean, it was just an overall look.
Yeah.
You looked tired. Your skin kind of looked gray. You looked a little bit sagged. Now you're all back. You're back to where you were.
How do you keep this woman? She's such a charmer. Look at her. Just throwing it.
I torture him. He's like, oh, yeah, sure, you should live with her.
So go to biobalancehealth.com, biobalanceskin.com. Thank you, Kath. Great to
see
you, my friend.
Thank you so much, David. Stop.
Ask myself, wow. 251 DGS on KMOX. Happy, gorgeous Wednesday out there. Man, weather, there's always weather. Sometimes we have weather coming in. We have weather all the time. But the difference between, was it just yesterday morning when it was midnight, dark outside, and just torrential rains, and everything's flooding. And then you wake up this morning, and it's 65 degrees.
The birds
and
are sunny, singing.
The birds are singing, and it's a weird world, man.
Mm-hmm. Everything passes. That I mean, that's a good thing to keep in mind. Is like, hey, if you don't like this, it's going
grit
to
your
change.
Teeth a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. Speaking of gritting your teeth, I wouldn't have known Colin Coward if he bit me on the butt. But you keep bringing him up, and
I
now
hate
I keep
Colin Coward.
Noticing him and his. I don't mind someone who makes exponentially more money than
me. No, not at all.
And I don't mind people who are better than me. I've met many of them. I do resent people who make exponentially more money than me and are idiots.
Yeah, and also, but more than that, lazy, right? It's like Colin Cowherd got in with ESPN 25 years ago, right? Good timing. He was a reasonably well-known guy, but not a super well-known guy until ESPN hired him. And he's done a great job. I mean, he's very talented. But, like, you see these types of things from him all the time. So during the All-Star break, he's doing All-Star coverage, right? Now, we all know, anybody that follows sports knows, Colin Cowherd doesn't know jack squat about baseball. But he makes it worse by not trying to know jack squat when he's doing baseball coverage. If you're just doing NFL coverage, and by the way, this is the guy who will do the thing. He's done this before where he's talked about, I think the key player for this NFL team is this guy, and that guy's not even on that team. Like, he makes those kinds of screw-ups. And he kind of did that with Derek Jeter during the All-Star break. So he's interviewing Derek Jeter. He's talking about generations and Paul Skeens, because Skeens is, everybody's excited about him. And he's like, oh, well, you faced Nolan Ryan. And Derek Jeter's like, no, I didn't. He retired before I ever got to the big leagues. And it's like, it seems like a minor thing. But when you're talking about something, you should know something about what you're talking about. And my point is not you should know exactly when careers began and careers ended, but you or somebody that works for you should have looked at it. If you were going to ask Jeter about that, who were the best guys he faced during his career? And just go look at that, because then you would have a real question asked. But he's just like, oh, they sound like they're vaguely similar in age. I mean, Nolan Ryan retired at age 46, I think 2.5 years before Derek Jeter made his major league debut. So they don't cross over. He never faced Nolan Ryan. And even if he did, he wouldn't have faced 30-year-old Nolan Ryan throwing 104. He would have faced the old guy who was still throwing hard but not throwing like what we're talking about. And that drives me crazy, is the lack of preparation and the lack of even caring to get it right.
Think of how the sports business has changed since you've been in it.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's just blown up.
And all that really matters is hot takes at that level, right? On TV, it is entirely about, and look, I think I missed my calling because I love to argue, but I'm also not a big fan of just making crap up. Like, I don't want to just create controversy. I think that's ridiculous. But like a guy like Cowherd, he is the king of taking something simple and making it seem like his simple observation is the most brilliant thing you've ever heard.
And that's a talent.
He will construct a whole segment around the most basic observation. You know what wins football games? Touchdowns. And then he'll go on like he just discovered something.
The Bulldog Bob Brown hot take. Is that the future of sports, or do you think it's...
It's the present. It may or may not be the future. A lot of that depends on people that are, that are Rach and Andrew's age and younger. Like, what do they want? Do they want Hot Take Central? Do they want, just norm? Like, there are normies out there that are really good. But unfortunately, on TV, it's Skip Bayless, it's Stephen A. And they're all super talented. I think Stephen A is brilliant. But sometimes you can't always be outrageous, right? Outrageous can't be every day, because otherwise it's an act. And everybody has to know that. Anger can't be every day, or it's an act. You can't be angry about sports every day.
Yeah, good point. Or politics.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.